Hello, everybody, and welcome to our, I think it's the last for this year of our elite calls or elite content calls. And I believe we're working on immune system. I went through them all and we've been going in order. So the last one left is immune system, even though it sounds very familiar to me. I know I did a lot of talk about immune system last year. So that's probably why it's fresh on my brain. So we'll be talking about immune system. Once these are over, I'm going to start to do a couple of extras that I offered to do, which is vagus nerve. And, you know, I don't remember even what all the others were, but a whole bunch of extra little, you know, extra goodie type calls that we'll be adding to the sequences. So what I'm going to do is share my screen, and I want this to be an open conversation. If you have questions, you can stop me along the way. And I'm going to go through and show you what's on the site, but also we can have some extra over and above type conversations and other things that, you know, you may find useful to know when it comes to the immune system, because face it, right? It's always important for us to be focusing on our immune system, regardless of whether there's a pandemic, regardless of whether, you know, you're a school teacher and have snotty nose kids around all the time or have your kids around. It's important because the immune system supports everything, right? The immune system supports us when there's a viral pandemic, when there's a bacterial infections going around, when we're exposed to folks, but also protects us against cancer. And it gets out of balance when we are having leaky gut problems and toxic metal exposures and creates autoimmunity. And we'll go through and I'll show you where all the resources are on the site. The purpose is not, as usual, to go through everything that's there, because there's lots of videos and you can go into more depth, but to really give you an outline of what's out there and reminders for how you can be day by day, hour by hour, supporting your own immune systems. Sound good? Yeah? All right. So I'll share my screen. So, you know, one of our team members years ago always loved acronyms. And so all of our programs have sometimes some unusual names, like GRAND. Like, who would know that GRAND is a gut repair program, but she wanted it to have, I think, CAFE for adrenals. Well, the name she chose for adrenal, the immune system, is SHIELD. And it actually is good because that's what the immune system provides for us. It's a shield to protect us in here from the world out there. So it makes a lot of sense. So she called it scientific and holistic immune enhancing diet, lifestyle and diet. She made those things up so that she could come up with acronyms. So it's kind of fun. So what we have here is you've got five different parts of this immune system module for you. You can skip the getting started because you've been started for a long time here, guys. But what you want to look at is starting with part one is just overview, the assessment of how you work it and how the immune system works, herbs and foods for fighting infectious disease, strategies for calming the fire of inflammation and autoimmune disease, and then managing allergies. So these are all of the functions that our immune system has. And I created a presentation for each of these with resources and action steps. So I'm going to do is open up the first link, which is to assessments. And you might have already done a lot of these assessments with your coaches as part of the beginning of ERC, as part of some of when we do webinars and things like that. But there's a video, it's probably not that long.
Hello and welcome to
14 minutes. So just to introduce you to the assessments related to the immune system. And then we have this immune system assessment, and it includes allergies, it includes infections, it includes the autoimmune, and that's in PDF form or the online form. And then we also included here, because this program was meant so that it could run by itself without, you know, being part of ERC, also links to the body system and organ assessment. So it gives you an idea of how to assess it. You've probably already done it. There's also one you may or may not have done. It's been around, but it's an oxidative status assessment. So you've heard the term free radical damage and oxidative stress, and it's the damage that's caused to our cellular mechanisms by various environmental toxins, usually rancid or oxidized fats that have been heated up or exposed to oxygen and all that. So we basically give you some questions to find out how likely you are to have oxidative stress. So it talks about your various foods, various exposures, but also exposures to drugs and various symptoms. So if you haven't already done that one, I highly recommend that you give that one a go. Then we have pointers to, these are in other places in the site, but vitamin C calibration, zinc taste test, zinc challenge, and OxyData. And I just give a link here to this Assess Your Own Body Systems handbook. It's got 70 pages worth of various assessments that you can do at home for yourself. The ones that are really related most to the immune system would be the vitamin C calibration, the zinc taste test, the zinc challenge, and the OxyData. I'm not sure if you can still get those. They used to be these little vials that you can buy from a company online called Apex Energetics, probably others. And you basically take your urine and you put a few drops in it and you watch to see the color, the depth of pink that it turns. And that gives you an idea of the presence of a particular oxidative marker in your urine to give you an idea of whether you've got oxidative stress going on. But just to give you an idea, you've probably seen this booklet before, maybe, maybe not. Yeah, 75 pages. And so it's got an index. So you can find all the different things that you want to learn how to do at home for yourself, for your family members, to see the status, not just of the immune system, but there's digestive markers, there's nutrient markers, et cetera. And these are all easy to do at home type things. You know, you can buy the strips, or you can buy the little vials, or you can just do various tests on your body, the vitamin C flush and all that. So the ones that are really the immune system and that are related to this module would be these three, the vitamin C and all the zinc ones. Okay, so you're welcome to have fun with that. As far as labs, there's definitely labs that will help you to understand how your immune system's doing. It's mostly on the very basic lab testing called the CBC, complete blood count. There's others in the regular, you know, the labs that the doctors do every year as a ordinary, you know, regular part of the routine exam. But the CBC has the most about the immune system. And when I click here, it's a description of those various markers and what they mean. So if you're wondering how your immune system is functioning, you can pull out your latest lab and you can look things up and read about some of these. And you've probably heard me talk about them if you've been on my lab calls. And, you know, so there's the basically there's the lymphocytes and all the neutrophils, lymphocytes, eosinophils, basophils, monocytes. Then there's markers for inflammation, C-reactive protein and ESR, erythrocyte sedimentation rate. Then there's some specialized tests, which we don't normally run, but it might be something that somebody would run for you if you had a specific type of thing we're looking at for inflammation. And then gluten testing is, I would consider that part of the immune system, food sensitivity testing, and then any antibodies. These are the most common antibodies, but there's dozens and dozens and dozens of antibodies that could be run if there's a suspicion. Vitamin D is super important for immune support. So it's making sure that every time you get your blood test done, you test your vitamin D and then you adjust your vitamins based on the season, based on what kind of exposures you have or what else is going on. And that's it for the assessment. Any questions on assessing your immune system? You've probably heard me speak this over and over. Yeah, Jenny.
Could you repeat again how long you can expect when you make adjustments to like vitamin D, when that should show up in your blood work when you have the test?
Yes, vitamin D will show up very, very quickly. So yeah. If I have somebody who's very low vitamin D, I'll probably recommend, like say they're under 10. I'll say, let's just do 20 or 30 IUs a day of vitamin D for about 6 weeks and then retest. And I had one woman who tested it. She was eight. She took 20,000 for 6 weeks and retested, and she was up to 108. That's how quickly it changed.
What about something like zinc that, of course, I struggle with? Should it also respond?
Not that quickly, much more slowly.
Are you looking at a month, 2 months? Oh, no, you said 6 weeks for vitamin D. So
vitamin D, I'd say 6 weeks, but I would say for zinc, more like 3 to 6 months. to see a significant change.
Okay, thank
you. A little bit of a change, but usually longer than what you've been supplementing. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Any other questions before we move to the next piece? Is that good? Everybody clear?
Yes. If zinc makes you nauseated, is there something in the challenge about can you do it in some other way?
So if zinc makes you nauseate, like the liquid zinc?
Not the good state ionics, but any of the other forms.
Any other form of zinc makes you nauseous?
Mm-hmm.
Not just like trace minerals, because I've heard that from a lot of people.
Trace minerals, like even like a zinc lozenge, you know?
Even a zinc lozenge, but the ionics don't.
No, it doesn't bother me at all.
I would say that's the one you use. You use the one that you can tolerate.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of possibilities for why I don't, you know, it affects the digestive system for sure. Zinc will make more stomach acid. Zinc will help you make more digestive enzymes. So it has all these positive effects on the digestive system, but maybe it's pushing too much too fast. So another option is, you know, small, build it up. But a lozenge is usually very slowly absorbed. And they're usually around 15. I've never seen them much more than 15 milligrams. So it's, you know, but that's still a hefty dose of zinc, given that that's right around the RDA. So yeah, I don't know what to say. I know that a lot of the liquids give people nausea, the trace minerals one in particular, because it's very strong, whereas some of the others are more dilute.
I just want to make a comment. I had that issue, and Dr. Rita Marie, you told me, are you drinking enough water with it? And I doubled the amount of water I drank whenever I put it in there, and it stopped making me nauseous.
Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, so that could be it too.
Thanks, Jenny.
Great.
Oh, sure.
All right.
Dr. Rita Marie, is there anything else that helps assimilate the zinc?
Yeah, so taking zinc with something acidic, like Jenny started taking her zinc with her vitamin C powder, but then we realized there was zinc in her vitamin C powder, and zinc interferes, not zinc, magnesium. Magnesium can interfere with zinc, so we stopped that part. Who's unmuted? Okay, all right. So we started, what was I going to say? Oh yeah, so we stopped that, and she's taking it with the liposomal that doesn't have that. So acid. So you could take it with some lemon juice. You could take it with some apple cider vinegar. You could take it with some vitamin C powder. That'll all help you assimilate it. Glutathione. So if you do take glutathione, take it with your zinc. That will help it absorb. And there are a few others. I take it away from copper, because copper will interfere and magnesium will interfere.
Okay, great.
Great. Okay, so let's go to part two. Hopefully that works.
Dr. Rita Marie, it looks like you have an echo.
There's an echo coming from, is it someone, who else?
I don't hear it.
Okay, I think it's coming from you because you're muted. You're not muted. Let me just mute you and see if it goes away. Okay, is it there? No, it was coming, mute. You might have me, the speaker, close to the mic, Rich. And so I was echoing off you. That's why you didn't hear it. All right. So if you ask the question, I'll unmute you, and then I'll mute you while I speak. That way it'll prevent the echo. All right. Anything else before we go on to how the body's surveillance system actually works? And this is something everybody really needs to learn. This stuff is what people need to learn because, you know, we've been in this pandemic situation for over a year now, right? And people are being given advice that isn't necessarily in their best interest. Oh yeah, washing your hands is always good. And, you know, keeping the distance, especially when people are coughing and sneezing, is a good idea physically. But, you know, sitting around watching Netflix and eating popcorn and drinking beer is not necessarily going to be helpful for your immune system. But that's what a lot of people are doing. They're gaining weight. They're sitting around. They're not going outside because they're afraid to get sick. You've got to be outside, right? You got to be outside. I go outside every day. I will tell you, I've worn a mask 3 times. Why? Because that's when I've been around other people in indoor situations, 3 times in the last year. But I'm out every single day. you know, people pass you on the trails and they keep a distance, and you know, the likelihood of getting infected by passing somebody on a trail while you're running is pretty much slim to none. You know what I mean? So we really do need outdoors, not just for the vitamin D from the sun, but we need outdoors for the fresh air, the negative ions. There's so much. And if you live anywhere near a beach, for God's sake, go hang out at the beach. Just walk along the beach. That's your exercise and that's your negative ions. And it's just, there's so much support for your immune system. So the things that support the immune system the best are good, healthy, whole foods diet, right? Relaxation, exercise, and then a specific set of nutrients, which we'll talk about. Does that make sense? So we really do, people need to learn how this thing works because they're not given the right information. So we have this really cool video, and the video will show us, I'll just take you through some of the slides. You know, what the immune system does, it protects us. What some of the free radical damage is, what that means and how that works. Assessing, which we talked about in the previous one. But in addition to the symptom scorecards, there's physical signs, and you have within your packets of on the Empowered Self-Care kind of site there, we have for you all of the assessments. And there's so much a self-assessment there that you can do. And there's a physical exam thing. So you can look at the physical exam and see, are there physical signs of low zinc? Are there physical signs of inflammation? What are you finding there? And then of course the lab test, which we just looked at. And we'll look at more about, related to autoimmune and allergy as we go through. But this is super important. There's barriers to protect our body, and that's what the immune system provides. The skin, right? If you didn't have skin, what would happen? Every time you got exposed to anything, it would just go right into your underlying tissue and muscle. And if you've ever cut or ripped open an area, it's pretty messy under there, right? It's got to be protected. The intestinal lining. The intestine is actually not inside your body. It's outside your body. It's a tube that runs from mouth to anus. And it, in order for things to get into the body, it has to go through the wall of the intestine. I always go like this because you've got probably like this, the villi, right? And the foods and stuff, the nutrients have to go through. And that lining protects it from, there's nice tight junctions between them that just let the good stuff through. But then when we get a leaky gut, the bigger stuff goes through, right? And then, you know, stuff that shouldn't get into the bloodstream gets in there and triggers an immune response, whether it be toxins, whether it be bigger particles of food, and all that triggers a response by the immune system. And then the lungs, right? We breathe in the lungs and they're protecting us. They're bringing in the oxygen, but they're also protecting us. And they have a really nice thick mucous membrane to help catch things and expel things, right? You cough when you're exposed to things. That's a mechanism related to the lungs. It's an immune response, is to get it out, get it out, get it out. And then the blood-brain barrier, which is very similar in structure to the intestinal lining. And it keeps things that are in the blood from getting into the brain. So if you've got a lot of like heavy metals floating around in your blood, an intact blood-brain barrier will prevent those things from going through. It'll just allow what's supposed to go through, similar to the intestinal lining. But the same kinds of things that damage the intestinal lining can damage the blood-brain barrier, and we call it a leaky brain, right? So like a leaky gut, a leaky brain. And so when that happens, some of these chemicals get into the brain, and then you might get exposed to something and you're sniffing some, you know, new carpeting somewhere, and the chemicals from that get into the brain and you're suddenly feeling like woozy and lightheaded and brain foggy. So these are really important protective pieces of the immune system, and we need to protect them. Vitamin D is critical for all of these, right? Not just vitamin D, but vitamin D is a major player in that. And then there's other pieces to the immune system, right? There's certain hormones that are part of the immune system. There's antibodies, white blood cells. There's your bone marrow, which makes a lot of those cells. The spleen, which recycles those. The lymphatic system, which cycles around and helps you to grab on to some of those nasties and put them, you know, neutralize them and excrete them. And the complement system, and there's a bunch of chemicals in there, complements and interleukins and all, and cytokines. You've heard the word cytokines. The word cytokine has come from, you know, a life of nobody knowing them except for medical professionals to everybody hearing the word cytokine based on this pandemic and the concept of cytokine storm, where there's an overreaction of the immune system to try to fight this virus. And then boom, we get this like thickening and inflammation that's harmful. And then the thymus here, which makes and converts like B cells and T cells right here. So those are all parts of the immune system. And it's really important that we know what they are and be able to protect what they are. And the presentation in here will go into more details than I'm going into now, but these are all the different kinds of white blood cells. Right? And they do different things. So if your neutrophils are high and your lymphocytes are low, there's a good chance that there's a bacterial infection your body's fighting. And if the lymphocytes are high and the neutrophils are low, there's a good chance that you're fighting a viral infection. And those are the main white blood cells. But then there's smaller players that have very low percentages of there, but they're important. Basophils related to histamines and allergies, and eosinophils, which are related to parasites and allergies, and monocytes, which you've probably heard, if you've heard anything and paying any attention to all the COVID stuff and antibody testing, they test your IgGs and your IgMs. And those M's are monocyte related. So it's like later stage of the infection. After the infection is cleared, you might still have the monocytes there. And then what else? Plasma cells are just basically, they're producing your antibodies. B cells are like memory cells, right? You see this bug and you go, oh, I don't know what that is. Let me get a blah, 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 kill it off. T cells at attacking it. And then it's like, let's remember this guy for next time. Because if he comes in next time, we're not going to take so long to get him. We're going to get him right away. And so the B cells are made, the memory cells are made, so that the next time you're exposed to that, it goes, bonk. Blunk. That's why we call, you know, if you get exposed to something like chickenpox, you usually have lifetime immunity because your body recognizes and goes, boom, get rid of this before it does any harm. And that's what immunizations are supposed to do as well. Although it doesn't usually confer lifetime immunity, it's shorter term because it's not the natural approach. And these are just other chemicals in here, all kinds of things, cytokines and lymphokines and thymosin and interleukins and steroids and corticosteroids. This is all part of the immune system. And these are all cells that help to fight things off, whether it's be inflammation or, you know, various and sundry other pieces of the immune system. And macrophages, I always told my kids they were like Pac-Men. You know, and when you have something, you know, you're having a cold or a flu and fighting things off, there's these Pac-Men that are going and gobbling up and surrounding that bacteria. And they're types of cells made from the monocytes. Let's get them. So those are really important. I don't know if you've ever heard me tell this story before, but it's a cute story. When my son was two, he's now 27. So this is 25 years ago. He was 2 years old and we had traveled to Hawaii for some kind of business thing. And my husband was meeting us there. Scott was going to meet us there. And Eric and I got there and we're talking and I said something about, you know, colds and dad has a cold. He's not feeling so hot. So let's be careful when he comes here, whatever. And he was asking me questions. He always asks me questions. So here I am talking to a two-year-old, telling him about monocytes and macrophages and how macrophages will gobble up the bacteria. And that's what helps you when you're fighting something off. And he's like, oh yeah, he's paid attention. And then 2 days later, Scott arrives and he's coughing and sneezing. And Eric says, Daddy, you need more macrophages. So I was like, he got it. And so Scott comes to me. Scott never knew what macrophages were. He comes to me and goes, do you have any macrophages? Eric said, I need them to help me with my cold. I'm like, well, you got them in there. But even, you know, even kids can understand the importance of that. And we always made our macrophage inducing soup, right? That's what we would call. We'd take some celery and broccoli and some carrots and what else? I think that was it. And we'd throw them in a pot and we'd throw basil and oregano and all those antiviral type things. So we'd cook it up first and then we take it and put it in the blender and blend it and add the oregano and thyme and all, and then blend it up and put some salt and pepper or whatever. And they'd always drink that if they ever felt like, you know, anybody in the house had a cold. So after a while, that was like, mommy, I think I need that soup. You know, they're dripping their nose and they drink the soup and go to bed and be fine the next day. So that was my kid's sickness experience. So there's antibodies that are produced in order to fight things off. And you've heard of these, right? So IgMs and Ds are the first line. IgGs are most prevalent in the blood and they're more of a delayed reaction. IgAs are in the mucosa. So you, if you've ever done a stool test, you'll see the levels of IgA are measured. It's an antibody in the mucosal surfaces, the nasal, the lungs, the intestinal tract. And then the IgEs are those, they're the ones that if you got them, you know it, right? You get exposed to grass or you get exposed to some sort of allergen in the environment and immediately you start sneezing or coughing or hives or whatever. That's the ones that are the immediate hypersensitivity reactions. And then the lymphocytes, this is a little bit more detailed than we'll go into. You watch the video if you want to know about it. It's here for your knowledge. You don't have to know this, but it's kind of helps you to understand like where the lymphocytes come from. The different T cells is worth stopping for because you hear that a lot. Like people talk about AIDS, right? It's an immunodeficiency and it's a deficiency of the T cells. So we don't have enough of the killer or the helper T cells. So there's various kinds of T cells. So these T cells will, like there's the cytotoxic, which are like kill. There's the suppressor, which says, okay, you've done enough killing, turn off. There's the helper that helps to bring other chemicals into the environment to help the T cells. So we've got two different kinds of T helper cells, which are T1, which is like immediate hypersensitivity, and then TH2, which helps to stimulate antibodies. So it's an imbalance between these that can create problems. We want cytotoxic T cells when we're exposed to something. We want the helper cells to send in, you know, the troops, including cytokines, but we don't want them to do too much. We want the suppressors to come in not too soon, right time to say, okay, we're done. We're safe now. And what happens in the case of autoimmunity is the suspicion is those suppressors aren't working so well. And, or if it's a long-term chronic illness that just won't go away, that the suppressors aren't working very well. So that's the T cell situation. And we-
Does the T stand for anything in particular?
I think it's because of they're produced by the thymus.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, those and the B cells are produced by the thymus. That's a good question. And so this is just basically the way it happens, right? The invader makes his way in, the macrophages grab it, and they actually take it and present it to this antigen presenting cell, then summons the rest of the immune system. Here he is. You got him. I got him here. Who's going to get him? Who's going to kill him? And then the vitamin D receptors are important for these antenna. And it searches for the vitamin D and the T cells start to mobilize. So that's why vitamin D is so important for the immune system. And that's why when you have an acute illness, if you take extra large doses of vitamin D, you can knock it out in a few days. Right? Because it's going, okay, let's get this mobilized. The T helper ones bring natural killer cells, cytotoxic T cells. The natural killer cells and cytotoxic swarm and invade the invader, right? But now that's a new guy. That's somebody we haven't recognized before. They then make sure that there's enough protection, the regulatory, and then the type 2 alert the B cells to make antibodies. And memorize the intruder, like take a quick picture, right? Take out the phone, take a picture of this guy, put him in storage so that we recognize him when he comes in again. And then it shortens the reaction time so that hopefully you don't even get sick. You may not even notice that you've had exposure.
Question?
Yeah, please.
So on that one where it says the T helper cell type 1, bring natural killer cells and cytotoxic T cells to APC. What is APC?
APC is up here, the antigen presenting cell. That's basically, you know, hey, we've got this guy. Now let's, you know, present it to the rest of the system.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for that question. Any other questions? I know I'm kind of running through it quickly, but the video, I go a little slower, I think. And this is just a picture, you know, it just shows you, you can follow it if you want to, of the, what I said in the previous slide, but graphically. And I talk more about it in the video there. I wanted to say a little bit about this mast cell membrane. So there's these cells called mast cells, and the mast cells will help us to produce histamine and pro-inflammatories to help get rid of things. So inside of these, if you've ever had your blood spot fatty acid test, you've seen us look at the arachidonic acid and leukotrienes and thromboxanes. Inside of the mast cells is that whole fatty acid cascade, right? So it's happening in there, and we're producing the inflammation, and then we have to also produce an anti-inflammatory response to slow it down when we don't no longer need it. A lot of times people have ongoing inflammation after a certain illness or injury, and it just won't go away. And a part of that is when these all get out of balance, and those fatty acid profiles is why I like to do those, to see how well your body can do the inflammation. So that's the mast cell. And then this is what's inside of the mast cell, right? It's just a little pictorial approach, right? The firefighters, which come from these PG1s and PG1s, yeah, ones and threes, and they're basically killing off this arachidonic acid. So we need it. It comes in, it creates a fire to really get rid of the bad guys, you know, whatever is causing. It causes inflammation, yes. And if this keeps going, there's a problem. But if it doesn't keep going, if we have it, the firefighters are doing their job, and you have enough EPA and GLA to say, okay, firefighters, good, get rid of it, gone, then you're good. But what happens in Western medicine is that we try to intervene here with medications. So you have some inflammation and you take some NSAIDs, right? Over the counter, like, you know, Tylenol and things like that. And also steroids will affect the conversion from alpha-linolenic acid, which is your like flax seeds and chia seeds and hemp seeds and walnuts, short chain omega-3s. They need to get converted to long chain omega-3s. And that's the anti-inflammatory. But so when we take NSAIDs or steroids, we're shutting off the inflammation right up here because we can't make the EPA. It shuts it off here. We can't make the arachidonic acid. So we can't make the arachidonic acid, basically, is the what we're looking for, but it also turns off our own production of anti-inflammatories. So basically, you're killing the firefighters, right? You can get rid of the inflammation, but you're killing the firefighters at the same time. Your body doesn't have the ability to fight it anymore. And the NSAIDs will work down on some of these really potent inflammatory chemicals like these thromboxane A2s, but it won't touch the leukotrienes over here, right? So you'll still have, and sometimes you take NSAIDs and you go, well, I don't know what's happening. You know, I don't know why I can't get rid of the pain. It's because it's a pain that's going down this pathway. So in reality, what we want to be doing, right, is supporting it nutritionally. So if we can get more of the alpha-linolenic acid to convert into DHA and EPA, it's going to displace the arachidonic acid and give us more likelihood of having long-term lowered inflammation and less pain than if you just kill it up here, right? So there's times when you have to take a drug because it's so bad that you need it and you do it. But there are people that take this stuff every single day. They take aspirin, Tylenol, they take these things every day for their joint pain or because their little finger hurts or, you know, and you want to save it for the big guns, right? If you're in a car accident and you're, you know, really messed up, there's times you're going to have to take painkillers, no doubt. But if you're keeping your body clean in here, like I feel like I've been keeping my body clean in here. And when I had broken my arm, I never took any medications until I got it x-rayed and realized it was broken and I needed surgery. When I went in for the surgery, I didn't take any medication still. I just, you know, did all my natural stuff. It was after the surgery when, you know, they cut into me and moved things around and it was really messed up. It was probably about 24 hours after the surgery that the injected like numbing agents were no longer in my system. And I started to have pain and I'm like, okay, I can deal with it. And then I was getting, I can't sleep. I can't, you know, I just couldn't deal with it. I took a couple of Advils and I didn't even, we don't have that in our house. I sent my husband to the store and he said, they gave her this prescription and it was some kind of really potent narcotic. And I'm like, I'm not taking that. Go take this to the pharmacy and just ask them what I should take instead. And they said, well, you could take Advil. And blah, blah, blah. So I took a couple of Advil, and because my body was clean and I hadn't taken Advil for 30 years. I don't think I ever took Advil. I probably took Tylenol back then, but I hadn't taken anything from over 30 years. It was like my body responded to it, right? I hadn't developed a tolerance to it. So that's the problem. If you take these things on a regular basis, your body develops a tolerance and you need more and more. And then when you do get into trouble, like a car accident or a surgery, it's not going to work as well. And you're going to be really tempted to take some of the heavy narcotics. So that's why all of these nutrients are really good. And we explain it more in the video, but these are the nutrients that are required to help take your flax seeds, chia seeds, hemp seeds, and convert them downstream. And this is why we talk a lot about having your omega-6 and 3 balance, because when you have too much on the omega-6 side, it can convert down into the arachidonic acid, especially if you don't have enough of the EPA. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Am I going too fast? Yeah? Okay, good. You've probably seen me do this before. Let's see. Okay, so that's it for that. Let's see what your action steps for here are. It's basically, it's basically looking at your lab results. So we give you this chart and you could take your own lab results and compare it to here. So the neutrophils, the eosinophils, and learn more about them. So it's just an educational tool. And the picture, if you want to really know where they're done and how they're coming about and what the immature ones are. You know, if you've ever looked at your lab and seen the thing called MCV, mean corpuscular volume, and if it's big, those are immature. See how much bigger the immature cells are compared to the mature cells? That's because the B12 and folate are needed to mature these guys. And that's one of the things. And what's this? Oh, and so here's a white cell, you know, it'll tell you if you have abnormalities in any of these or the percentages, then here's some of the things that it could mean. Okay. It doesn't mean it means it, right? Like eosinophils are usually allergic, but if they're not, you know, it's not that, and it could be leukemia, but any of these could be leukemia. You just have to check it out, but it's usually not. Okay. Questions? Yeah, Rich.
I'm going into surgery tomorrow for a hernia in the groin area.
Mm.
And so they are no doubt going to be sending me home or perhaps get a prescription for the narcs. So what you're suggesting I do is get some Advil while I'm at the CVS?
Yeah, because if it gets really bad and you don't want to take the narcotics, just double check with them if there's any contraindications to it. Are you going to be knocked out or are you going to be on local?
No, I'm going to be knocked out. Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing is, you know, give it 24 hours or more, but then large doses of vitamin C, arnica, vitamin E, you want to help with the repair, especially given, you know, it's gone into your intestinal wall and you need to repair your intestinal wall. So you need those sorts of things, the omega-3s, but don't take them before surgery because they'll thin your blood and you may not clot, you know, when they
No, need. You're right. They told me not to, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, I would definitely say, and if you don't want to take the narcs, double check that there's no contraindication for taking Advil or something like that. And then if it gets really bad and you can't sleep, but I would also after the surgery is start to load up on things like ginger and turmeric and vitamin C. I was making a concoction where I made a ginger juice and I made some turmeric juice. And every hour I would take, you know, a slug of ginger, I'd put water in it and then I'd add some vitamin C powder to it. And I would take that every hour after the surgery was done. Now, after you've, you know, it started to heal. You don't want to do it during the surgery because it may.
Right.
But yeah, that's what I did. And then there's, you know, things to calm you down because you get stressed out after surgery. Cortisol levels go way high. Don't be surprised if you test your blood sugar that it's way high. So things to calm you down, whether it's, you know, essential oils that you're breathing, chamomile, lavender, those sorts of things. So all the things you can do to calm your body down, to get those cortisol levels down. Right? The way I described it is, I always talk about the tiger chasing you, you get stressed out. In this particular case, the tiger bit you, right? And ripped into your skin and opened it up, and your adrenals don't know the difference between the tiger and the doctor, right? It says somebody cut into me. It's a major stress and it causes your cortisol levels to go way high. Your blood pressure might go high too. My blood pressure went up to like 140 over 95, but then it came back. You know, so I laid around and I meditated, I did heart math and, you know, sniffed on essential oils. I mean, if you could see what I was doing, homeopathics, I had this little shoebox full of everything and I would just muscle test myself at any point in time to say, do I need this one? And I was just scarfing them down and I had a really quick recovery. Yeah. Good.
Great. Yeah, thanks.
One of those things. Is it an inguinal hernia?
Yeah, it is. Exactly. It's, I've had it, it really popped out size of like a racquetball about 4 months ago. And so then I got one of those belts helped to keep pushing in.
Yes.
While I was still finishing my skiing season, because I lost my skiing season last year. So I didn't want to lose it this year. And the doctor said, that's fine.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's a lot of it is lifting and, you know, contracting, like what they call a Valsalva maneuver. When you're having to lift anything heavy and you're doing, that's what can be problematic for it. So you just be careful of that. They'll give you instructions. I had one of those. I had two of them. Is yours just one-sided or both sides?
It's on the right side.
Yeah, I had it on the left and the right. And I had surgery on that when I was 2 months old. Yeah. It must have been some kind of genetic and hereditary defect, because I have there's nine of us in our family and seven have had hernia surgeries. Seven. So there's something there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Something there in the genes. My brother had it, you're right, the double hernia when he was just a baby as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Thanks.
Okay. Is this working? Is my mouse not working or? Okay, there it is. All right, so we're in Paeslala, part three, which is the fun part, right? All the herbs and foods for fighting infection. One of the things, Rich, that they may want to do, and you have a choice of this, you can say yes or no, is they will put you on an IV, obviously, for, you know, giving you whatever medications during, but I had just saline because I didn't go out. I was awake during my whole surgery. But they want to put an IV antibiotics in there at the end so you don't get an infection. So you have to make a choice for yourself, but just make sure whatever you're signing beforehand, if you don't want them to put antibiotics into your IV, that you tell them that. So what I basically did was they said, but you're at increased risk of an infection. I said, I have my ways. And so that's where bowel tolerance, vitamin C afterwards, vitamin D, vitamin A, all of those things are going to be really supportive. And we'll go through some of those here in the next session to support your immune system so you don't get that. So I told them I would take my chances. All right, so this is the herbs and foods for fighting infectious disease. You've probably seen me talk about some of these, especially if you were at any of our events last year, because we talked a lot about this stuff. So review of the immune system's job. We did all this before, and then I get into, so I repeat things because sometimes it takes like 5 or 6 times. So what can go wrong with the immune system is it can be overactive or underactive. That's basically it, right? It's underactive, meaning you have more prone to getting a lot of infections and immunosuppression, like your immune system's down. So you're really careful, the boy in the bubble kind of thing. Overactive would be autoimmune and allergies. Right? And they could be allergies to food, allergies to the environment. It's basically the overactive is when your body's going, oh, that's dangerous. Let me attack it, when it's really not, right? Your thyroid is not going to hurt your body. You know, your joints are not going to hurt your body. Why are we attacking it? It's because the immune system gets dysregulated. And, you know, grass is not going to hurt you, but your body got dysregulated. And there are some genetic markers that will predispose you to being more prone to allergies or autoimmune. And we've gone through some of those before. But basically the weakening of those barriers, right? We talked about the skin, we talked about the lungs, the blood-brain barrier and the intestine. Vitamin D deficiency is super huge because the immune barriers, they're not supporting you. Blood sugar irregularities. They found with COVID that when people had blood sugars over 120, whenever they, you know, at any point in time, even if they hadn't been diagnosed with diabetes, that those people were more prone to having severe reactions. So blood sugar imbalances affect the immune system. Overactive adrenals increases cortisol. Cortisol thins the membranes and affects, you know, lowers the immunity. A diet of heated fats, sugar, gluten, pesticides, all the things you guys know about. Gut inflammation, stress. And then, you know, if your mama, when she was pregnant with you, had food allergies or intolerances, and she ate those foods anyway, which most moms did back in the day, especially, right? They didn't know, you know, they weren't going to avoid foods. And so their mamas are eating it. That leads to increase in autism, asthma, and eczema in the kids in later life and childhood too. And then food allergies will also allow your weakening of this immune barrier. So these are the things we've talked about throughout this whole program that we need to get under control. So step one in balancing your immune system is reducing the toxic load with diet and lifestyle modifications. Go figure, right? Exercise, reduce stress, balance the adrenals, blood sugar, reduce your antigenic load. Go gluten-free, go dairy-free, go egg-free if you have to, go broccoli free, if that's an antigen for you, right? Reduce that. That's why we do the whole elimination diet that we ran back in starting in January, February, to help you to identify even those good foods that are not good for you. Reduce the environmental exposures to toxins. Rich had a major reduction in that by retiring and not being exposed to all those toxins at work, right? Reduce dietary exposures to toxins and allergens. Stop eating all the processed foods and eat organic foods, whole, fresh, antioxidant rich. So, and repairing leaky gut is really important and eliminating any gut infections. So step two would then be you replenish the nutrients, right? So vitamin C, zinc, vitamin D. I like micellized liquid vitamin D. I find that it's best absorbed, but if you can't tolerate it, you can't stand the taste of it, whatever, you know, you take what you want, but that's what I usually recommend. Vitamin C is as much of the liposomal as you can afford, but it is pricey. It's like a dollar a gram versus, you know, you can get a whole bottle of the potent C for a whole lot less. So cost per gram is a whole lot more, but when you are fighting something serious, I would always go with the liposomal. I would definitely go. They found that 10 to 12 grams a day of liposomal can be equivalent to IV vitamin C. And studies have shown that with vitamin C, IV vitamin C can knock out really serious infections like hepatitis and mono and things like that within just a couple of days. And then the fatty acids, which we talked about before, and then antioxidants, glutathione, superoxide dismutase, catalase, and then your vitamins A, C, and E. Things that slow down or damage the immune system, the stuff we've been talking about all the time, right? Sugar, trans and heated fats, MSG, pesticides, preservatives, infections, allergens, artificial colors and flavorings, processed grains, acid forming foods, and you've got your acid alkaline balanced foods on listed on the site, inflammatory foods and cortisol, high cortisol and low thyroid. These are all things that slow down or damage the immune system. Nobody's talking about this on TV. Have you heard people talking about this stuff on the news lately? Like, this is what you guys should do if you want to avoid COVID. No, it's run down and get your vaccine and wash your hands and, you know, whatever else. But they're not talking about, this is what people eat every day. This may be foreign to you by now. This is what people eat every day. This is the prescription for an infectious disease. And there's the nutrients. So, you know, Rich, if the, you know, these are the kind of things that would be important for you. If you deny their offer for IV antibiotics, these are the kind of things. When you're looking at it, I would go to zinc. I'd probably go pretty high on the zinc, like maybe 40 milligrams, 50 milligrams, just, you know, to get you through. Selenium, you know, I wouldn't go too high on that, but you have a thyroid thing. So maybe, you know, 100 to 400 micrograms. Vitamin C, I'd do bowel tolerance, but minimum after surgery or in an infectious disease process, I'd probably do 2 grams three times a day minimum when you're trying to fight that off, unless it gives you diarrhea and then you know you don't need it. Vitamin A, 3 days of vitamin A in the neighborhood of 100,000 IUs, which is enormous. Don't go more than 3 days, but that can knock out any kind of serious infection. So that's
how many drops is that?
It depends on what you get, but the one I have is from Seeking Health and it's 5,000 per drop. So that would be just 20 drops. It's not a lot. It's not a lot, but don't go more than the 3 days. I mean, if you go a little bit longer, it's not going to kill you, but you don't want it to build up in, yep, in the liver and create fatty liver. Manganese, you know, manganese, you can look up manganese supporting foods. You can do, manganese is good for connective tissue repair as well. So I forget the exact dose, but I would go with something like twice the RDA, probably. Copper, I'd be careful of. So you have to make sure the copper and zinc are in ratio with each other. So I'd be careful about copper, just, you know, if maybe 10 to 1 on the zinc to copper ratio. And then your sulfur containing amino acids protect the immune system, cysteine, methionine, things like that. And the foods, right? Of course, our organic stuff, our fresh foods. Algae, mushrooms, things like that, especially some of the medicinal mushrooms like shiitake, maitake, chaga, reishi to an extent. Yeah, reishi. Those are all very good immune system supporters. And you guys had access to the, what did we call, practical herbal therapeutics. You know, go in there and there's a whole section, I think it's part 2 in there, is all about mushrooms. And it's a lot of good detail on supporting your immune system with mushrooms. Garlic, bell peppers, I use red bell peppers or orange or yellow rather than green because they're riper. Ginger, turmeric, omega-3 rich seeds, you know, chia, flax, hemp, all kinds of good stuff that you can support your immune system with. And think about the average American person, right? They eat very little of this stuff. They eat very little. And that's why everybody's, you know, so freaked out about getting sick. Well, here's some immune system supporting herbs. You've heard of these, echinacea, ginseng, ginkgo, ganoderma, chaga. Not that you need to take all of these, right? But these are some of the things you can do. And for just general protection, I recommend mixing it up, right? Making little elixirs or hot cocoa beverages or smoothies and just mix them up so that you do some days, some other days. They all have different ways that they support. Make sense? And then top immune system boosting herbs. So there's a difference between supporting and boosting. We got to be careful with this because some things actually make the antibody production stronger. And they talk about elderberry with a COVID, that it could be problematic, that it could trigger the cytokine storm because it boosts and it makes more antibodies. So you just have to be careful with that stuff. I tend to go more towards the immune supporting herbs unless I know specifically what's going on with the person. But these kinds of things are like for chronic respiratory infections that won't go away. Usnea is amazing. For licorice, you have to be careful, but it's good for viral infections because interferon is a natural substance in our body that fights viruses, and it costs a bloody fortune if you want to get injected with it or buy it as a prescription. It's like $1,000 to get a prescription for interferon or shots of interferon, whereas there's some herbs that can do it, right? Maitake, love maitake. I think it's gentle. It stimulates the T cells. So you do have to be careful if there's an autoimmune that you don't trigger it. But it's good for blood sugar balance too. Again, you know, you guys know this, teas, tinctures, capsules, powders, extracts, elixirs, steams, topical, whatever way you get these in you, whatever way is the most comfortable for you and the ones you're going to do is the best way to go. If capsules are the way you're going to go, do capsules. If you tinctures, I find real easy because you can just pop them in anytime. The others take a little bit more work. Extracts you can usually buy. I buy powdered extracts, which I like, and I like to put those into like a smoothie or an elixir. Steams and topical, you know, topical if you can buy stuff or make it, but steams tend to be a little bit more work, right? You have to boil the water and you have to sit there and you have to make sure you don't burn yourself and all that. So these are some, I just listed them, things that stimulate and things that modulate. So, you know, depending on where you're at, if you are in a situation like you're just trying to protect your immune system, the immunomodulators are perfect. If you're in a situation where you have an active infection, you may want to look at the immunostimulators to stimulate your immune system to do more. And you know, being careful that you don't overstimulate. I don't know of many situations where you're going to potentially trigger a cytokine storm. And I don't know how valid those various studies are that talk about to be careful with elderberry because it can stimulate a cytokine storm. So that's the thing I would not recommend somebody take elderberry during a COVID episode. Immune system essential oils. These are all things that you can sniff. You can put on your pillow. You can do the air, you know, the, what do you call it? Nebulizer type things. I mean, a nebulizer goes right into your lungs. It's a diffuser where it puts it out into the room, but a nebulizer is actually a machine that used to be only available through your doctor by prescription. And now they sell them on Amazon. And with the nebulizers, you can actually put the substances in the pot with the water and you put a tube up your nose and it goes down into your lungs. So it's a great way to get, you know, various herbs right into your lungs. So just be careful and research before you, and, you know, check with a doctor if you're concerned. So colds and flus, oregano, lemon, these are all essential oils you can use. Oregano is very potent antiviral. And it works really well. The thing I notice with that is that so many people take oregano just because that when we do stool tests and we find various microbes in their gut, they're resistant to oregano. So it's something not to take every day, right? It's something to take if you feel the sign of a cold or flu coming on. You want to dilute it because it can burn and it can actually cause, you know, erosions of the mucous membranes if you're not careful with it, but a little coconut oil works well. And if you're going to apply it to the skin, then make sure it's diluted well with some coconut oil or MCT oil and you rub it in because it can burn. Okay. We had gotten this very potent oregano. I don't know where we got it from, but my son was really little and he loved it. I mean, he actually loved it. I would put a little drop on his tongue and he would love it. I wish it was diluted, but he just loved the flavor of it. Got to the point where he would come and grab my oregano and take it straight as he got older, or tease his friends like, oh, you want to taste something really cool? And then he'd give them a drop of like, don't do that. And then various tips for conquering a cold that you can look at and apply for. Here's a sample regime. That I would have used over and over again for colds or flus with myself, with my kids, recommended to clients. Vitamin C buffers, I'd start with 1 or 2 grams an hour and then slow down if you start to get a problem with the bowels. But usually within a couple of hours, I feel like if I start to feel like something's coming on, it's gone when I do this. So zinc lozenge, 1 every hour or 2 or half hour early on, and then reduce. Herbal throat spray. I love, I think I have it here. No, I don't. It's downstairs. I have this herbal throat spray that's from Gaia, or Herb Farm is my favorite. And I just spray it and it's got all kinds of herbs in there. Very nice. Oregano oil. I'll put 1 to 2 drops in 16 to 18 ounce, 32 ounces of water, but also I'll put it in my smoothie, right? Or you can put it in soup and make an Italian immune soup. On Guard is from doTERRA. I don't know if that link still works, but you just find somebody who sells doTERRA and it's a really nice one and it tastes pleasant. So I've done that one. I've done, Young Living has one called Thieves. That's really good to take. And then colloidal silver. I think that's what I have here. No, is that it? Yeah. Colloidal silver. This is sovereign silver and they make this in spray. So you can spray the throat, but you can also, this one's a nasal. You put it up and you spray it and you get it into the nasal cavity. So that's a good one to take, or you can take tincture. So
that on Guard is effective. When I was starting to feel like a cold was coming on, I'd pump the on Guard and boy, it was like gone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very effective. Very effective. So you don't need all of this, but this is just stuff that you can, I just generally go for all of it just because I'm not taking my chances. By the end of the day, it's gone. And that's it. I do it for half a day and it's done, you know?
Yeah.
And then some food, green smoothie, making sure you have your omega-3s. This vegetable soup is the recipe that I used for my kiddos when they were little. And actually I used it, my son was visiting us for the summer after he graduated a couple, 3 years ago, whatever. And he was having these headaches every day. And he finally told me about it. And I'm like, what's going on? And he starts telling me, well, he's doing this. And I thought he was dehydrated, quite frankly. He was going out exercising, you know, and running and then biking when it was 100 degrees out. Are you drinking enough? No. He goes, maybe I need some of that soup. Maybe I need some of your soup. So I made the soup, right? What did it do? It hydrated him because I made him this huge thing. He got hydrated, plus he had all these things. His headaches went away. You know, placebo, maybe, but it worked. Lots of green juices and oregano oil, you know, so these are the kinds of things that you can do. But this, my family, it went really well for my family. I put the flax oil in because of the omega-3s. I put the kelp in. I put the kelp in for all the minerals, the avocado for the creaminess. So it was just, they really liked it. And this is just stuff we've been talking about. It's the pillars. So customize your diet, use only the fuel designed for your machine. So making sure you don't, you know, take stuff that's not good for you. Tune up regularly, give yourself an oil change, get plenty of rest, have move a lot and have fun. That's my basic prescription, right? And what's next? What's the dog barking at? I was going to go out running before and it started raining and thundering and lightning. Download and okay, so there's the nutrition guide. So the stuff that I had in there, I summarized in here. So you have a 3-page, like you can print it out. So you don't have to print out the big slides. Create a plan, you know, so look through the thing, incorporate immune balancing habits as described in the videos, experiment with the oils. And here's an essential oils guide that goes through lots of these oils. And you can just kind of pick out from these oils what's good for you. It's not just immune system oils, but it's this guide that I put together years ago and it's good stuff. Create an herbal defense kit, right? I always like to have these things on hand. If I get down to my last bottle of throat spray, I go and order 6 more so we have them on hand. You know, my son comes over and says he has, I'm like, here you go, take this, right? My husband says something, here you go, here's your bottle, because it's stuff to have around, right? And so here's what I told, you know, I put down some of the stuff to have in your herbal defense kit and the diet and lifestyle. So any questions on that? We good? Is this all repeat, refresh for you guys? Some new, mostly refresher? So this is the inflammation and this is autoimmune. And this is important stuff. I don't know how long this video is.
Hello.
It's a big one. It's an hour long. So there's a lot of great information in here. I'll quickly go through the slides just to give you a general idea. Again, I repeat things. So that's this assessment, mast cell membrane. Was I going through that? Yeah, I went through that with you guys earlier. So this is just a repeat and I talk about it here because this is very important for managing autoimmune. DHA and EPA are super important for immune function and for inflammatory control. And there are things that will inhibit, right? So margarine, shortening, hydrogenated fats, excess omega-6s and caffeine and all of these things, right? And deficiencies of the nutrients that are listed here, right? Deficiencies of those nutrients. Make sense? EPA, DHA. Okay. Yeah. So these are good. Like coconut actually helps to convert. So if you're eating chia seeds or hemp seeds and you do coconut with it, it's going to help it convert. Noisy. I was wondering if it was actually Scott or somebody else that broke in the house and was being noisy. lauric acid, mesuric acid, and the oil biotin. These are the nutrients that help convert that. And so, you know, that just a little bit of that with the omegas, with the high omega foods, is going to help a lot. This is what you'll see when you look at the blood spot fatty acid tests, and also in Excel spreadsheet that I put together, where you can put in your numbers. It'll give you a number. Anything optimal is usually between 1.5 and 3. It's unwell to have a ratio of above 10, and anything above 15 means a high level of inflammation. So we're always out there to lower the AA and increase the EPA. And this is just your general, all the stuff we've talked about before, the body's cleanup crew, et cetera. We talked about this on the previous one. We talked about that on the previous one. So when there's a dysfunction in autoimmunity, it could be not enough vitamin D, which prevents the T cell activation, which prevents the activation of the T suppressors to create a problem. And then there's damage to the innocent bystander. So say, you know, you've got this inflammatory process going on in your blood and your body's shooting out all this good stuff to kill it, but you happen to be around the thyroid gland or in the joints, it can create innocent bystander, you know, kind of like a drive-by shooting kind of thing. Too many B cells. So when the B cells, remember, are the memory cells. And if too many of those are made, there's too many antibodies, and then the body starts attacking itself. Parasites and food allergies increase an interleukin called IL-4, interleukin-4, and that causes the production of antibodies. So this is how the connection between food allergies and parasites and the autoimmunity, and then cross-reactivity. So if there's, you know, the way the immune system works is kind of interesting. So when it sees, say, this long protein that's a streptococcus or whatever, it's looking at the ends of it, right? It can't jump in the middle to look to see what it's going to attack. And if it recognizes, like those antibodies, if it recognizes the three proteins at the beginning or the end, or the three amino acids at the beginning or the end, it's going to think that that's the whatever. So it thinks it's strep, but maybe this strep thing has the similar function, a similar ends as thyroid or as joint tissue, collagen tissue, and the body attacks it by mistake. These are the different kind of chemicals in the body. And again, I talk about it in the video. If you're interested in learning this stuff, it's great. You don't have to have a good immune system. But these are the chemicals that work there. But there's autoantibodies to pretty much everything, right? I mean, anything in the body. These are the ones we know of that are important, but there's lots more. And the Cyrex Array 5 will actually measure for all of, like, 36 of these. Right. So the things that are risk factors are dietary proteins, you know, food allergens that are getting through that digestive lining because they're not supposed to, but they do. And then they trigger the immune system, having an infection and having a cross reactivity to it, and various chemicals. So I always look at, what do you need to produce an autoimmune disease? So the recipe is that you have certain genes that predispose you. Your immune system is dysregulated because of vitamin D or leaky gut or other factors. You've got environmental factors like gluten and deficiencies and toxins and stress, and they overlap. Where they overlap, you create an autoimmune disease. So it's approaching, you can't change your genes, right? But you can change the expression. So if you know you have an HLA-DQ gene, you stay away from gluten. If you know you have a gene that doesn't allow you to break down dairy products, you stay away from dairy products, right? Because otherwise you're putting yourself at high risk of autoimmune disease. These are some of the common ones. You've probably heard of most of them: Hashimoto's, type 1 diabetes, lupus, scleroderma, which is a thickening of connective tissue, and people are very stiff. Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, which is in the colon, rheumatoid arthritis in the joint, Sjogren's, which affects mucous membranes and dries them out. So dry eyes or dry mouth, celiac, which of course is gluten and it attacks the small intestine, and then multiple sclerosis, which is in the nervous system and it affects the way that the nerves transmit. So the things you can test all of these. the ones that we most commonly test and are missed on standard medical stuff, but are very common. I think Hashimoto's is probably Hashimoto's might be up there as the most common autoimmune disease or one of the most common autoimmune diseases. And you can mess the thyroid peroxidase, the antithyroid globulin, and the one called thyroid stimulating immunoglobulin, if we think it's a hyperthyroid situation, Graves' disease. Then all these others are things that you can do. Purkinje's and myelin are in the brain. So there can be antibodies to almost any part of your body. And there's that picture I showed you before about how the T cells work. When we look at the T helper one and two, I was a little, you know, when I showed you before that the T helper ones are usually related to kind of histamine reactions and the others to antibodies. It's not as clear cut. And it's not as clear cut as this. It's just like these are what they've seen in studies is that, you know, mostly Hashimoto's is related to T helper one, diabetes is, multiple sclerosis, chronic viral infections for sure. And then the others are related to T helper two, but it doesn't mean it necessarily. To balance them, we want to look at things that stimulate one or the other. And again, you have to be really clear on whether it's a T helper one or two. There's a list. Let me see if I have it here. Yeah. There's a list of these things that support. So things that actually support the T helper ones are these herbs. T helper twos are these, and T helper one and two for balance, you know, you're looking at more some of the nutrients and the probiotics. So if a person, there's a way to test this. And I know that Apex Energetics sells these little baggies of TH1s and TH2s. And what you do is you take the TH1 stuff for a few days. And if you feel worse, then you probably have a TH2 problem. If you feel better, you probably have a TH1 problem, and those nutrients might actually help, and vice versa. You take the TH2 support things and you see if it makes you feel better or worse. I often ask, does caffeine make you feel good or bad? Some people say, oh my God, I feel like night and day on caffeine, I feel great. Other people say, oh my God, caffeine just like, it knocks me out. I can't stand it. It makes me feel yucky. Or it's same thing with any of these nutrients, right? Any of these herbs actually. If you know they make you feel bad, you most likely have a if white willow bark makes you feel bad, you probably have an overactivity of the TH1 and you have an overactivity of the TH2 and you need to support yourself with TH1. And I explain it more in detail there. I know we're running out of time here and I don't want to be late for our next call, but things that slow down, we talked about this before. So some of this stuff is repeated and you'll see, you know, my explanation of it might be slightly different in the report. You know, for healing autoimmune, we need to heal the leaky gut. We need to get rid of the toxins. We need to see if there's any exposures to heavy metals, get rid of those. So this is a summary of the factors that support an autoimmunity and what causes it and what you can do. And then here's immune balancing habits. It's just summarized from the slides. And the oil change is critical, right? Giving your body an oil change, getting rid of the inflammatory fats and adding in the good ones, get out in the sun for vitamin D and strategies for managing pain and inflammation. So we'll finish up with the allergies. And again, I'm just giving you a summary. There's a lot of good information in these videos. Any questions on that before we go on? And some of you probably watched these. Who's watched these already? Anybody? Yeah, Sarah has probably. And it takes a few times before it all sinks in, right? Let's see. Yeah, so types of allergies, right? You have the stuff that you touch, you have the inhalant allergies, and then you have the food. Some of them are delayed where you don't get a reaction right away. Some of them are immediate where you do. Like if somebody says, oh, every time I, you know, eat a soybean, my throat closes up and I need to use my EpiPen. That's an immediate hypersensitivity. Do we need to test that person? No. If every time you eat strawberries, your face breaks out in a rash, do you need to do an allergy test or do you know, but it's those delayed ones that take 2 or 3 days to come on that you need to be testing for. So that's, again, let's see. So some of the testing that I've done, you know, for food reactions, the white blood cells, the differentials to see, there's some food intolerance tests. Those are last resorts for me. I usually work with an elimination diet. And then if we're looking going, I can't tell, what is it you're reacting to? You're reacting to something. Then we'll do a food intolerance. So this just gives you some information about the various kinds. And you'll read about that in there. These are all the different kinds of tests. For gluten in Cyrex Labs, no, for Interior Lab, where'd that go? I really like the stool test for gluten. It's really simple and it's very effective. There's a cross-reactivity array 3. So what foods you might be also sensitive that cross-react with gluten. And then you know how to do an elimination diet. We've been through that before, so you can listen to it again. It's a lot of that stuff from the food elimination process. So allergy recovery steps, right? You want to eliminate, obviously, to begin with, minimize exposure, repair the gut, reduce the histamine load. So that is exposures, but also looking at food. So while you're dealing with a food, an allergy, you want to reduce your load of histamine and stay away from gluten for at least 6 months. This is the damaging stuff. These are foods for allergy relief. So you can try these if you're getting into an allergic response. Some of them are anti-inflammatories and some of them are antihistamine. You could also add quercetin to here. Quercetin works really, really well.
Question.
Yeah.
Regarding histamine, if your metabolic healing report doesn't show an IgE SNP there, does it mean you don't have it?
No, it just says that gives you a tendency toward, there's a lot more that goes into it. Yeah.
I can see IgA, IgM, but no IgE.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the histamine, do you have the gene for histamine intolerance?
No.
No. But you have histamine symptoms.
So I have.
So we have to override it. What that means is that whatever triggered this is probably more of an environmental thing. And once you get that under control, you should be able to live life without that because it's not genetic. But again, you know, there's hundreds of thousands that we can measure and probably way more SNPs that we don't know about, right? Mm-hmm. So there's others that may be playing a part in it. So there may be something else in the genetics that plays a part in it, right? Yeah. Here's some nutrients, right? One of the things I'm going to say is these things thin mucus. So if you're having really thick mucus and it's hard to expel, N-acetylcysteine works wonders, as does bromelain. So, you know, you can't cough it up. There's this thick mucus. It's a really good thing to keep on hand. And there's some homeopathics. If you need them, you can read about them, and essential oils for allergies. And I highly recommend, if you have any allergy type symptoms, that you get a neti pot. It's amazing to clean out the sinuses. Anything that gets in there. There's the stuff, and I think that's it.
But isn't there that the neti pot, you should not be using it every day? You should be using it sparingly.
Why is that?
Well, I read some material that it said that it kind of you're wiping out, you know, your microbiome. Yeah,
you know, I don't think everybody should just prophylactically, preventatively do a neti pot every day. But if you're in the middle of dealing with a cold.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Of course.
But some people do it every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, probably that. And I mean, there's certain ways you can replenish, and you can put nutrients in there. You can put essential oils in there. But you do have to be careful what you put in there because it can be irritating. Mm-hmm. I tried putting grapefruit seed oil in there once because I thought, oh, that'll help kill out anything. It made my sinuses so irritated. It was worse than if I actually got the gold.
Ouch.
Yeah, it was yucky. Okay. So I think we've hit our time. I need to go on to my other call. But guys, I hope this was helpful. Was this helpful? Yes? No? And go back and listen and watch, and especially if, you know, you have something coming up that now's allergy season, if you want to really... nip it in the bud. Good stuff.
And right. One very last question.
One last question. I gotta go. I got to go to the next call. Tell me quickly.
So which is exactly the SNP where you can see your reactivity to medications? What's the name of it?
There's a bunch. So they're all in the phase one detox. There's CYP, I think it's 2D6. There's NAT2. There's a third one that I'm not remembering, but if you go into like that genetic detoxification book, there's a bunch of them. And also in my chart on the nutrigenomics page, there's these charts where I have the, I think I call them genetic genie detox summary. And in there, if you just read through those, it's pretty easy compared to reading the whole book. You'll see which ones, but there's 2D6, NAT2, and I just don't remember the third one.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.